If you enjoy our podcast, please consider supporting Glass Tire. All of the money we raise, since we are a nonprofit, goes right back into our coverage of Texas's art and artists. Our coverage is supported thanks to readers and listeners like you. If you would like to contribute, you can do so at glasstire.com/donate. Thanks so much and enjoy today's show. Hello and welcome to Art Dirt. This is a podcast where we at Glass Tire talk about topical art topics. I am Brandon Zeck.
I am Leslie Moody Castro.
I'm Gabriel Martinez.
And we are coming at you live or pre-recorded live.
Pre-recorded live.
From Dallas. All three of us are sitting in a hotel room recording a podcast on Friday morning after the opening of the Dallas Art Fair.
And talking about my dirty windows.
And talking about Leslie's dirty windows, but that's another
totally different topic.
So all of us popped around to the Dallas Art Fair yesterday.
As we do.
Gabriel and I were there for probably about 5-6 hours, which both doesn't sound long enough and at the same time sounds way too long.
Yeah, I was not there for 5 or 6 hours.
You were not.
I was not. I was there for maybe 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
which
a fair,
is also okay.
2 is enough to really walk around this fair. This fair isn't huge.
Yeah.
You know, it's under 100 exhibitors. Like, you can get an overview if you're not stopping every 30 minutes or 30 steps to talk to somebody.
Yes. Which it's true. Well, we also know what we're getting into, right? Like, there are very few changes in this fair.
Yeah. Yeah. That's I think we do this every year, but I'll do the lay the groundwork for anyone listening just in case haven't been to the fair. So the Dallas Art Fair, they moved it up this year. Normally it happens kind of mid-April. This time, obviously, we're coming at you from the first weekend of April.
This is very annoying, but that's cool.
It's, you know, we're breaking expectations.
That's true. That's true. We got to change it up. Yeah.
This fair is normally around 90 exhibitors, give some, take some. It's in a building in downtown Dallas that's a couple blocks away, like a block from the Dallas Museum of Art. It's this trade show building called the Fashion Industry Galleries. One of the things that I like about it, and I say this every year, and I really do mean it, is that it, because it's in a trade show building, it's not trying to be anything more than it is. Like, it feels like a trade show, which in my opinion is a compliment to an art fair, because it's not trying to hide behind being this crazy bastion of like mecca for art. It's like these galleries have brought artworks here to sell them, and there is a public that maybe not as much this year, but that is buying them. Because it's this kind of it's not a small building by any means, but it doesn't have super tall ceilings. So it means people can't bring really huge paintings. You know, it's not like Basel, Miami. It's not like the Texas Contemporary was, which was in Houston years ago.
Was at the convention center in downtown.
Yeah, which was at the George R. Brown. So it's a completely different feel. It's a little more intimate. A word that I pulled out this year was maybe it's a little more homey, which again almost makes it sound weirdly like provincial, but it's totally not. Mm-hmm. Gabe, this was your first time at the fair. What was that like for you?
I wish everyone could see Gabe's face right now.
I'm glad they can't. I mean, mentioning the Houston fairs, there was a couple of them, I think is a good starting point for me, because I had a booth there several years in a row, and I remember walking out of the sort of booth bubble to go to the bathroom, and you could see the massive cavernous space you were in, and it just kind of reminded you that, you know, you're in a bubble, and you walk out and you see these huge ceilings. That was not the case with the Dallas Fair. Everyone knew each other. It was a smaller space. I mean, I still got lost, but
oh yeah, it's not necessarily the most navigable, or at least maybe not the first time you come.
Definitely
you do occasionally need to double back a little bit. It's a little circuit. It's almost like an off-road like dirt track.
Yeah.
And the two floors don't mirror each other either. So it's like if the bottom floor is not the same as the top floor. Yeah.
I think another thing that I learned from you two is that the galleries are in the same spaces. And that was not the case, you know, with Houston. It was just a wild, you know, wild.
Good luck.
Yeah. So there's a familiarity for people who are returning to it, who have seen it, who know the galleries well. I think that also led to the hominess, you know, and the comfortability. Everyone was really kind of warm to each other. You know, as you and I walked through and everyone recognized you, we talked constantly. I mean, we were there for 5 hours, and my feet can testify this morning. but it didn't feel like we had walked 20 miles going through this maze, you know. I mean, the Houston ones, it's like the last scene in Citizen Kane where they're putting his life away in the crates and with the forklift. And here it was, the ceilings were lower. You were just kind of in, it was almost like being in the galleries or in a gallery complex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that one of the things I really like about this fair is that everyone really does plan around it. Like, we know who's going to be here. We know who's coming to Dallas. We know, like, we're going to see all of our friends this time of the year. We're going to hang out. We're going to have a good time. And Dallas knows how to do VIP. And so everyone gets treated really well. And I really love that. Yeah.
Yeah. Leslie, what were your takeaways from walking around it? You got a little bit of a walkthrough like we did last year on Wednesday night, which is when no one is there, which is maybe the best way to see the fair.
That was the best way to see the fair. Yeah. This year it was really nice to see everyone. I actually was really surprised about the evenness of the work. Like, there wasn't any single gallery that I was like, oh, I hate that. Remember last year there were like the Texas paintings made out of mud or something, and you and I were like, that's terrible. I didn't have that sense this year. There were some Texas cowboy paintings, but they weren't terrible. And I was like, okay, that's okay. I can live with this.
Yeah. I feel like one of the themes we identified last year were horse paintings, and there were horse paintings this year, but it didn't feel oppressively horse.
Yeah, it wasn't. And that was like horse paintings from like London or somewhere that shouldn't have horse paintings or something. And it wasn't as bad. I noticed that there was a lot of like figurative work, and there was a lot of sort of landscape work, and like, mm-hmm. which I didn't hate. There were really beautiful paintings this year.
Well, I feel like last year, one of the things is we kind of noticed abstraction starting to creep mm-hmm. back in. And this year in the, again, kind of, we're going to paint with a really broad brush. So this isn't definitive of what's at the fair, but what it felt like was that there was, I agree, a lot of figurative, a lot of landscape stuff, not as much abstraction as last year. So definitely it's almost not, like we're yeah. leaning back towards figuration, or people tried it on last year and it didn't really fit.
With their cowboy hats.
Uh-huh. Except there was a lot of like 1960s and 1970s abstraction by, you know, artists who either weren't as famous in their lifetime
yeah.
or artists who are kind of well known, but it was mid-sized pieces or maybe kind of B-minus pieces by mm-hmm. them. I don't know what it is about 60s, 70s abstraction, but I feel like there's a cool vintage around it that makes people kind of into it. I heard yeah. that from, I mean, Gabriel, you and I noticed that walking through. I heard that from a collector that I was talking to when I was walking through the fair, just like there's a whole lot of this stuff, but no contemporary abstraction.
Interesting. Yeah, there were a lot of really nice like prints, a lot of like really nice color fields. I don't know.
I mean, I saw a lot of work that had figuration in it, and then it was kind of in a field of abstraction. I also saw a lot of sort of natural themes, flowers, mm-hmm. fields of, you know,
just fields.
Fields, color fields, colorful fields, not
roads
color fields.
With a vanishing perspective, but painted in a really brushy way.
It seems like
very wide brushy way.
The natural world was, you know, was writ large in a lot of the work that was there.
Yeah, I think that one of the works that still stands out to me was just a vase of flowers, like a giant vase, giant flowers on a giant canvas. And that's one of the things I remember the most that I take away from this fair.
We pointed out flower painting last year too.
We did.
And I mean, I feel like I didn't see as much of that this year
uh-huh.
as I remember last year.
I think this year it was just better.
Yeah, the ones that were there were better.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, which weirdly makes them more forgettable in a way.
It's terrible.
Well, Gabe, back to your point, one of the things that that we noticed as we were walking through, and it goes to your point also, Leslie, of like figuration, but landscape, but is the abstract portion of that. Like it was a lot of works are painted in a way that was so brushy or so loose that if you just kind of glanced at it walking by, you would think it was an abstract painting. Mm-hmm. And you kind of had to sit there and look at it to really get what was going on, or you had to notice the one weird little part of it that was painted in focus.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's a weird, it's almost kind of like having your cake and eating it too. Like it's like it's figuration, but it's getting even looser, but it's not abstract, but it needs to be grounded because we don't just want to sell abstract pictures.
Do you think that that's the Dallas Market?
It's always, I feel like, so hard at an art fair, even at this one, you know, we know Dallas's Market fairly well.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's hard to distinguish once you get so much of it in front of you. What is Dallas's Market and what do people think Dallas's Market is? Right. Because that's what an art fair is. That's why these people, these gallerists are bringing these works to sell, because they think this is what will sell.
Which is why we had those weird cowboy paintings made out of mud last year. Because they think that that's what. Yeah. OK. That makes sense. Yeah.
So like it's I think there's a weird disjoiner. I don't know if that's a word.
It is now.
But between those two things where it's like, I feel like a lot of the time I know what Dallas's Market is. And then I see people bring things to the fair and I'm like, wait. Which one of us is wrong? Right?
It's always them.
I mean, none of the acquisition works fit in those categories.
True.
I think another theme that ran through the pieces, including the acquisition pieces, is that there's never a sort of resting space for the viewer to like comfortably feel like they're looking at a perspectival representation of something. So maybe that's the influence of AI or just collage, you know, from computers as source material. Maybe it's an indication of a larger area of time that we're in, you know, where there isn't really, you know, a sort of overarching style of what we're seeing in the art world. And so you have these pockets of composition in so many of the works that we saw. There was never a solid resting place.
Well, which actually, to speak on that, if you want to talk about the acquisition prize, we should talk about that.
Yeah. So, Gabriel, what you're talking about is the Dallas Art Fair Acquisition Fund, which is a thing that happens every year. Or has happened every year since, I think, 2016. What this is a group of patrons get together and pool some money so that the Dallas Museum of Art gets, quote-unquote, first pick from the fair to acquire works directly for the museum's collection. Of course, works are pre-sold at the fair, yada yada. What does first pick mean? You get it. This year they had $100,000 to spend. In past years, they've kind of doled that out a little more. Like, I think last year they picked like 12 works. A lot of times, or at least over the past couple years, they've been trying to add works by BIPOC artists, gay artists, LGBTQ plus artists to their collection. This time around, they focused it a little more. You know, there's an argument for what if you took that $100,000 and bought one thing or two things or three things that might really quote unquote matter in the history of art, whatever that means, which is problematic in and of itself. But this year they focused it a little more and they bought three larger scale pieces.
I was very happy to see that like Inman Gallery got some love with that, like some homegrown galleries got.
Yeah. And they have been fairly good. Like, last year, I believe they bought a piece from 1226. It wasn't by an artist who lives here, but they have tried to dole that out to at least some local galleries and some local artists, which has been nice. But this year, it was a very large scale, maybe approaching mural sized piece by Ji Young Che from Inman Gallery, a piece by Tanya Peterson from Nicodem Gallery, and Alvin and Brian from Curlin Gallery, which Curlin Gallery actually took the spot of Night Gallery's booth upstairs, formerly formerly Tally Dunn's booth upstairs, kind of one of the main feature spots at the fair. So these three pieces, they're two of them are kind of, I guess, in the, again, looking at art history, non-traditional materials. Like Ju Young's piece is a painting. If you know her work at all, she's exhibited across Texas in San Antonio, Houston, Dallas recently at the Crow Museum. Mm-hmm. So it's a painting, but it's kind of like collaged on canvas. So it has a lot of these elements. It's very busy and fun, and it's almost kind of like a build out of
it's
her
beautiful.
Mythology. Yeah. And then the piece from Curlin Gallery is a tapestry. And then the piece from Nicodem Gallery is embroidery thread on cotton. So two pieces that are kind of like, you know, may have traditionally in the past have been seen as craft work, but I feel like are having a moment this year. I think actually last year we thought that there wasn't that much like weaving or embroidery or stuff at the fair. So it was interesting to kind of see a little bit more of that this time.
There was
time
a
around.
Lot this year actually compared to last year. Yeah, there was a lot of like textile, weaving, embroidery. There was a lot of that this year, which I was happy to see. And it was good.
Yeah.
It was really good. Did you notice a giant jacket in the stairwell?
Oh, yes. There's a very big sculptural sewn together, and I guess painted probably, jacket by, was that Amanda Ross Ho?
I don't know.
Okay.
I didn't actually see a label.
I didn't see a label either. Okay. I just saw it walking up the stairwell.
Yeah, because it's enormous. It's enormous. How could you miss it?
The traditional pieces that were acquired, I think, had you know, source material that was not affiliated with craft, or you know, the Nebrian piece is obviously composed on a computer first and has this really complex sort of application of probably Photoshop to historical images that kind of ruptured this field. And the other piece, the Tanya Peterson, also had a non-traditional content and subject matter in this sort of more traditional form, which I thought was interesting. And I think it kind of plays into what we were talking about with the sort of abstraction, figuration binary, that you just see this kind of something traditional representing something very non-traditional. They were all three very stunning works. It was a smart, all three were smart choices.
Yeah, they were. I was surprised because I wasn't there for the announcement. And I was like, kind of when I was wandering through, it was like, okay, I'm going to pay attention to the labels to see what was acquired. And I only saw one label, and that was the one from Inman Gallery. And so I was like, oh, I wonder how they decided to divvy up this money this year. And I think they made really smart decisions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed.
Mm-hmm.
Do we know if it was less this year, or is it the same amount as last year?
So it varies. I don't remember what it was last year, but sometimes in the past it's been like 150,000. So this as 100,000, I think, is on the lower end of what it could be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it, like, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it depends on who is part of this, you know, the table that, like, gives this money and how they decide to do things. But it seems like they're trying to be a little bit more conservative with their money and, like, making really smart decisions for the museum.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when you buy 12 works with your $120,000 or $150,000, like, that sounds like a lot of money. But when you divide that up between 12 works at an art fair, it's a little bit of a scattershot approach.
Yeah. Totally.
Which, you know, I mean, sometimes you need a scattershot approach and sometimes you need to focus. So it'll be interesting to see how in future years they decide to course correct or stay the same.
Well, and I think that, like, last year was a very open attempt to be more inclusive, and that was great and wonderful. And I think that's what the DMA needed and needs, and all institutions need these things. But I think that, like, with that framework being very sort of careful and very what's the word I'm looking for, thoughtful about how you acquire, is the right move, I think.
Well, that's the other thing. It's helping shape these artists' careers,
right?
which is obviously a really important step in this, but there's also, I mean, I feel like, and again, not that the museum hasn't done this, but there's a need to think about how these artists have proven themselves, because we don't want to get into a situation where the museum is just bloated from this art fair acquisition fund. Right. And in 50 years, they have a piece of work by someone who stopped making work 5 years after this piece was acquired. Or, right. I mean, or maybe that's a really interesting capture of history, which I actually have. That's how I've been thinking about this, is that it's capturing what's going on in the world and in Dallas at this particular time. Mm-hmm. So even if an artist, you know, doesn't blow up or like stops making work, or even if there's a weird trajectory around anyone that's acquired, it's kind of a weird, awesome, interesting time capsule.
Totally. Yeah, it is.
I think the advantage of spending that money on multiple pieces, like 10 or 12, is that you are probably supporting artists who are lesser known, and you're getting, you know, them at an earlier stage in their career. Having said that, I think that the three of the three artists that were acquired, I know Ju Young's work only because I'm in Houston. I wouldn't probably have known her work. So I think that these are also supporting artists at a certain stage in their career. And I was glad that it wasn't, you know, a Rauschenberg print or some, you know, someone that doesn't really need help with their career.
What I also think, like, to go back to what we were saying at the beginning, like, this is a trade show, right? Like, this is, I mean, at the end of the day, this is like the art world convention. Yeah. And I think that that is something that people forget. And so the fact that they are supporting artists that are, you know, in our generation of makers is pretty cool.
Well, and I don't think this has happened. Like, the museum has really gotten good things out of this deal. Yeah. But and of course, not that there's no planning beforehand also. But if the museum has this money, they got to acquire something.
Yeah.
So that's the other flip side of if I, again, I don't think this has happened, but if the museum walked around and was like, do we have to like it again? That's not what's happened.
That's not what's happened.
But you know, if that's also, that's part of why this fair is normally pretty good.
Yeah.
Because the museum wouldn't make this commitment and say that they're going to do that if the fair were bad.
Can we hypothesize to a day when maybe they're like, we actually need more white men in our collection? Can you imagine that happening?
What a future. What a long time from now.
Y'all, we really need to fill this hole.
Those George Bush paintings are looking pretty good, and they're on discount, so maybe we could get some of those.
Oh my god, amazing. But no, it is a good fair. It is a very good fair. Sorry.
I was surprised to see works that I, by artists that I really like, that I had never seen. I kept being surprised as we would walk in a space and there was just a, like, I saw two Andrea Geyers that I had never seen. I don't know the series. I know Leslie Hewitt's work, but I hadn't seen pieces at Periton, Tavara Strahan. There was a lot of surprises that were really nice. Even there was a little Liam Gillick. Mm-hmm. I was also surprised there was no Marilyn Monroe's in glitter paint, which is what's staple of the contemporary.
Yeah. There was a lot less neon this year in the actual Dallas Fair. Not in shows, but in the fair. There's a lot less neon.
There was a lot of high saturation. There was no faded, you know, at all the colors, no matter if it was, you know, abstraction or representational work. It was a very saturated palette.
I wrote down garish, which is maybe taking that a step farther.
Certainly.
A lot of garish color happening.
There was some of that. Yes. Yes.
Well, that's almost in contrast also. So, Gabriel, you and I went and took a beat yesterday and also headed over to the Dallas Invitational, which is in its second year. This is a hotel art fair put on by James Cope of And Now Gallery. It's in the Fairmont Hotel, which is right across the street from the Dallas Art Fair. And it's kind of, it's become even, I feel like, stronger in its second year. It has galleries from London, from New York, from Los Angeles, Night Gallery, which was one of the anchor tenants we mentioned earlier, had the booth that was formerly Tally Dunn's jump ship this year and went to the Invitational. Other galleries like Various Small Fires, which was at the art fair last year, went to the Invitational. Other galleries that people might know, Clearing, James Fuentes, Hannah Hoffman, Lomex. It was a pretty strong lineup and a lot less garish over at the Invitational. Oh, it was a little more muted and measured, and it's an interesting contrast.
I have not been to the Invitational this year, but I am planning on going. But my bigger question is, can Dallas do two fairs? We've seen this in the past. It hasn't always worked.
I think one of the problems with Houston was that they scheduled them at different times, and no one was going to fly back to Houston. You know, there's you want to no get way. Everyone there. Yeah. This was smart that it's right across the street. So we just took a break, walked over there. The work was, of course, smaller because they're in the hotel rooms. The walls were kind of grayish brown, and so maybe that affected the way we were perceiving them, but it was a much more subdued palette. Every piece in there was no real crazy bright pieces, which was a little different from across the street. I'd like to think it could support two fairs, especially given the fact that some of those spaces have been in both. So, I mean, I think it's possible. Definitely was enough interest with the people there. You know, most of the people we talked to had either already gone or were planning on going across the street.
I think this is a, you know, sort of the benefit, but also the downside of the Dallas Art Fair is that it can't grow because it stays in the fig. It's a floor plan that cannot really change. There's not very much wiggle room. But one of the things I really loved about Invitational last year was that you had natural light.
Yeah.
It's a really beautiful way to see art. And so I hope that it stays around for that. And people seemed excited about it last year, too. And so I think that Dallas can support two fairs. I would like to see it support two fairs. I think that like healthy competition is always good. I don't know. We'll see.
I mean, the phrase that was thrown out once by Kelly, the director of the art fair, and again by someone else, I don't remember who, forgive me, in a recent article that one of the other art publications published about the situation of two fairs. Mm-hmm. We'll link that in the reading notes in the post to this podcast, is, you know, a rising tide raises, or what is it? I'm going to get it wrong now. A rising tide raises all boats, raises all ships.
Yeah.
You know, the idea that if there is healthy competition, everyone benefits. And I think the question, can Dallas support two fairs? I think a short answer is yes, but the more complicated part of it is I don't know if that's the right question, because the hotel fair, the Invitational, is completely different from the Dallas Art Fair. Because if you're doing the hotel fair, like Gabriel, you and I were commenting how a lot of the booths whose pieces that we really liked had like small scale or small mid-size work that could have been brought over in a suitcase. So it's like, when you're doing a fair like that, you can very feasibly do a fair on a budget, which is not necessarily something that some of these galleries need to do, but at the same time, it's something that makes it sustainable, even if they like make connections and sell two pieces, right? It's the cost of a hotel room and a flight and maybe an extra hotel room and some Ubers. And that's it, compared to paying for a booth at the Dallas Art Fair. I haven't talked to the folks at Night Gallery or Various Small Fires about their choice to go over to the Invitational, but I'm going to be interested next year to see where they end up. It's like the question is, are they at the Invitational because they wanted to be with that group of galleries more, because they wanted to spend less on a booth, or because they weren't selling at the art fair? Or because the space is more interesting, which is totally fair.
Yeah.
But whatever the question is, does that bump them back to the art fair?
They get both.
Or do they bump away?
They get both.
And just not, they do both.
they do both.
I think that would probably be actually the worst waste of money. Unless you stayed at the Fairmont, like the gallerist doing the fair stayed at the Fairmont and turned their turn their hotel room there into the art fair room. That's, in which case, hey.
I mean, we see, I see this in Mexico City all the time where like, and when Material first started, what, 15 years ago, I remember it was like a big deal. And the big fair Mako was like, oh, well, we're just all fighting for the same boyfriend, as they say in Spanish. But now it's like the big galleries do both fairs. And one of the reasons is because the distances of the fairs are so extreme. To get to the big fair, it takes forever. You're in traffic for an hour and a half. Leaving is a pain in the ass. But this is different because they're right across the street from each other. And the two spaces are so drastically different. Yeah, we'll see what happens.
I think one of the big differences between the two, of course, economic and practical reasons, but you kind of have to plan a booth or a installation that is not dependent on the sort of dazzle of a spectacle, you know, at the Invitational, where you just you really need to bring work that's smaller, kind of because you can't back up far enough to see it, and also because it's probably fitting in a suitcase. But you know, with a booth, you definitely want to pull people in by having, you know, a giant piece or something that is, you know, neon colors, for instance, high saturation. Whereas those paintings, I mean, when we were in there, that one gallery that had the shower curtain painting, and there was natural light coming in. If the sun was setting, it was pretty,
the Invitational?
Yeah, it was pretty special. And none of the, you know, galleries there brought really crazy, you know, big Bobby dazzlers. They were more subtle.
I mean, this is like definitely a Dallas thing. It's like the Dallas Art Fair, you have your champagne, you drink out of a sippy cup with an octopus on it if you want. Like, it's a very like dazzling fair. It's a beautiful fair in like downtown Dallas. And, you know, you get your benefit party and you get to wear your sequins and your stilettos. But like the Invitational just seems like maybe it's a bit more, I don't know, thoughtful, intentional. Like the natural light makes a really big difference, I think.
For reference, Gabe, you're referencing the London gallery The Approach and paintings by Mike Silva.
Thank you.
Well, I think one of the interesting things, again, the space, hotel fairs are just fun, first
fun.
Off, right?
Yeah.
But I think one of the things that we didn't talk about this, but we agreed on it very easily as we were leaving, a lot of the galleries that left the furniture in their hotel rooms were the better booths.
That makes sense to me, yeah.
You know, it's like you're not trying to, and again, not hard and fast, exception proves the rule, blah, blah, blah. But if you're trying to use the space for what it is, why are you taking out the bed and stuff? Like, have fun with it and like play into it. Don't try and turn it into a gallery. It's not a gallery.
We all know where it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's in a hotel.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Like, just like we are right now.
It's so true. Also, when you pull the bed away, there's like, you know, marks on the wall.
Oh, no one wants to see that. Yeah. No one wants to see that. It's very weird.
Indents in the carpet from the bed that's been there for 5 years. More. You know?
Yeah, no one wants to see that.
I did pay a lot of attention to the outfits of people in the in both fairs, but really more in the Dallas Art Fair. Like, there was some amazing outfits, you know, like the people were also on parade for
Dallas
sure.
Dallas does that well.
Yeah,
Dallas does that very
sure,
well. So actually I missed the benefit party, which is like one of my favorite things to do because I fell asleep and never woke up. But I think that you should talk about your first time at the benefit party last night, Gabe. People on parade.
Part of it is, okay, I feel like normally, yes, that would be a huge conversation topic. It was kind of sparse.
Really? Did everyone fall asleep?
It was, yeah, I think it was a lot of day drinking yesterday.
There was
so
a lot of
the
day
whole city was, you know,
true.
They're recovering from a hangover today. It's true. We were already up on the second floor when that opened. And so we were kind of expecting a flood. And there was a lot less people than we expected, for sure. Yeah. In fact, there may have been as many people, maybe not.
As just during the day?
Yeah.
I mean, we left around 7:45, and the fair, like, opened for the VIP preview at 5.
Right.
Normally by 7:30. It's a zoo.
Yep.
You can't walk through the lobby. The Everyone's valet line is a mess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we just walked downstairs and strolled right out.
Wow. Thank you for appeasing my FOMO, guys.
Yeah. No, it was, you know, and of course that is to say there was a nice little crowd there, but it's nothing like I have experienced in the past.
Yeah.
You know, the eclipse is 3 days from now. Hotel rooms have been really expensive in Dallas this week.
I also wonder if this is like a reflection of like the year of philanthropy we've had with like...
It has been.
This is a $250 ticket.
Gallerists were saying also, I mean, things are on hold this year. Things aren't necessarily moving quickly, especially not big things, which is kind of ironic that the DMA bought three big things. And good for those galleries.
Bless the DMA.
Yeah. But no, it's I think it's a shakier market. Election years are always a little weird for philanthropy.
Inflation in the States has been weird, and that's been something that I've been hearing a lot of in Mexico. Like, it's just has been a very weird year for philanthropy in general. And this is a $250 ticket to go to a party, essentially. And so, and it's usually a coveted ticket.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. So much. Did you see lots of ball gowns at the very least?
It's funny, we mentioned that as we were leaving, like Brandon said, like usually you see people in full, you know, full gear. And I didn't really. I mean, everyone looked sharp, to be fair, of course, like very, very sharp. But it wasn't that extreme, you know.
Yeah, it wasn't Dallas extravaganza.
Yeah, amazing. Exactly.
You're going to have to come back, Gabe.
Yeah, I definitely need to see that.
It's really fun. It's
if
really
I don't
fun.
Feel like I'm underdressed at an art event, then it's not happening.
Yeah. It's usually really fun. And it is, it's totally Dallas. Like Dallas does know how to do VIP. And that's one of the things I really like about this fair. It's fun. And the work is usually really strong. We always have lots of very strong opinions about it. It's a fun fair. It's a fun time to be here too.
Yeah, I had a great time.
On that note, we're going to wrap up. We all have a very full day today. The Glass Tire staff is scattered through the winds across Dallas-Fort Worth. Thank you for listening. Hope you got a chance to check out the art fair if you were hoping to attend. And there's a lot of other things happening across Texas. So
enjoy
even if,
all those things.
Yeah, enjoy all those things. Even if you're not in Dallas, go see some art.
Go see some art.
See some art.
This podcast was recorded by Glass Tire and edited by William Saradet. Copyright Glass Tire 2024.